from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But right now, let's head out to the Wade4.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy. Check him out on the Believe Network, college and pro football analyst Joe DeLeon. Joe, I can officially say it today with the Baltimore Ravens rookies reporting to camp. Happy football season, my friend.
It feels so good. We're so close to the game. The college football video game's coming out soon. We got media days. I can feel it, man. We're almost there. It's been a long offseason, but we're almost there.
Yes, it certainly has, and a lot's been going on. Let's start with some interesting comments made by Joe Burrow this week. He was touting an 18-game schedule with a Week 13 or Week 14 second bye where the Pro Bowl games get inserted into that. I've heard a lot of media folk refute that, saying that'd be a hard sell for networks just because each individual game for the regular season is such a hot commodity. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the concept of the two bye weeks itself, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think if we do end up moving to 18, which it sounds like there's enough momentum for that to happen, there would need to be additional time off for these players. But one, the concept of an entire week off for the entire league feels like a lot. I also think that these additional bye weeks are going to be needed for international travel. It's going to be something that's going to be required for eventually when more of these games start to ramp up in other countries, where teams are going to want to have the following week off so that they're not really getting drilled into the ground with the amount of contact that they're taking on top of all the travel. But the last part of this is I don't think that the league would be too excited about it, albeit the current version of the Pro Bowl doesn't really have any contact in it. I feel like most guys would feel like it's a huge chore just to have to be there. It's not like basketball. It's not like baseball, where the amount of effort is pretty low and the amount of time off in between is good enough to make it justified. I really don't think a lot of guys in the NFL would be super juiced up about this. And, of course, the quarterback, who doesn't get hit most of the week, who's making the suggestion.
Yeah, you're right about that. Another thing that might be pie in the sky is a little flirtation going on between Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Is there any way realistically to make that happen? I think with the money situation, it might be impossible.
Yeah, I thought that this was the perfect example of the media, meaning us, taking full advantage of nothing going on and there being a golf outing for us to get juiced up over comments made at the beginning of the event. But you said it clearly. There's a lot of money that's been spent. I don't know off the top of my head the Jets cap situation, but to try and fit Devontae Adams for how big his contract was, that was the whole reason why he left Green Bay, was so that he would get a paid appropriately, he could get away from that front office that he might have felt that he wasn't getting the attention that he deserved. But overall, I just think it would be really, really tight to fit him in. And I also, it seems like the investment at receiver this offseason, where does he really fit into the mix? Because Garrett Wilson, we know, is pretty much the primary guy. And then he brought in Mike Williams. I just don't know if that would be a group that would fit and cohesively work together if he were to join it.
All right, when it comes to the quarterback situation, as we're talking with our buddy Joe DeLeon of the Believe Network, check him out there, college and pro analyst there. All right, the quarterback situation, Joe, and this one is just, we've talked about this before, but now it's getting down to crunch time. Does Tua make 50 and Dak make 60? Because those are the numbers that keep getting thrown out.
Yeah, I feel like the one that makes the most sense is Dak getting paid, and it doesn't sound like Jerry Jones is going to make that decision anytime soon, or make the right decision for that matter. But the guy who deserves the most is Dak. It feels like because of the microscope that he's under, we're constantly going to criticize him more because he plays for the Dallas Cowboys. But the inverse of this is one of his best seasons that he's had in his career that he's coming off of. It's very clear that, albeit they played bad in their last playoff game against the Packers, he still is a big reason for their success moving forward. They just need more coaching consistency and better in-game decision-making. It has nothing to do with Dak Prescott. More importantly, the fact of how hard it is to find a replacement. It almost makes you wonder, does Dallas just think because that all these late-round, undrafted free agent guys with Tony Romo and then now Dak Prescott, that they think quarterbacks fall off of trees? But Tua is a tough one for me. I feel like the number that's been thrown out for him is not really worth it for him. He has had good production, but it kind of begs the question of, is that the offense? Is it the weapons around him? A lot of yards after catch comes from that offense, the way that it sets up Waddle and Tyreek Hill. But it sounds like he does deserve to be in the mix around where Jared Goff was making, because there's a very easy argument to be made that their roles are very, very similar.
All right, when it comes to another guy who's been paid and is now looking to maybe cash in his current situation and maybe get paid again one more time on the back end of his career, is Derrick Henry. He's been touted already as being a secret sauce by Roquan Smith and Lamar Jackson, loving what they're seeing from the vet already. Do you feel like he's going to have a true impact in Baltimore?
I certainly do. I don't think it's going to be to the extent of the 2,000-yard rushing season that, or the one singular 2,000-yard rushing season in the crazy years he had with the Titans, but there's enough depth at that running back room, and also, more importantly, you have Lamar Jackson as an added facet to the run game. I think what's going to help is in the short area, short yardage area situations where he needs to pick up the dirty yards. I also think that he is going to be, in any event where maybe Lamar is taking too many carries, could be a really nice, easy spell for Lamar Jackson to take some pressure off his shoulders. And I think the biggest part is that when they get in these situations where it happened a lot last year, where they were up and they were able to build a good lead, and he's going to be the guy that at the end of games that they're just going to feed to slow the game down and take time off the clock, because we know that he can withstand those hits. I don't know if at this point in his career, as he's coming up at the end of it, how much longer he's got left, but he has proven to have been one of the rarities at the running back position that he can play for a lot longer without getting hurt compared to some of his counterparts at the position.
How much do you value what's gone on this season in Pittsburgh, Joe? Because that's the Falcons' opponent in week one. Revitalized Russell Wilson. Apparently he's in really good shape. You bring in Justin Fields to challenge him. Our friend Arthur Smith is there as the OC. What are you expecting?
Oh, man, the Steelers are probably the most obnoxious team to try to predict, because logic would dictate, if you look at this roster, young offensive line, which improved a ton. I'm optimistic on what their offensive line is going to do, but there's just a lot of newness to this team, and then there's this weird dynamic at quarterback with Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, and it kind of makes you wonder, like, who is the guy that they're trying to have there the longest? And if Russell Wilson plays really well, do they try to stick with him? And it looks like a team that is going to finish at the bottom of their division because of the better direction that all of those other teams have. But at the same time, Mike Tomlin always consistently finds ways to keep the Steelers relevant. And I feel like week one might be a bit of a slow start with that offense and trying to figure out what the identity is. Their receiving room is going to be pretty bare. Outside of George Pickens, I just don't know what are really going to be the big options for Russell Wilson to connect with. That could be enough and a big help for what goes into the Falcons winning that game and beating Pittsburgh.
To the college game now, a couple of questions. You mentioned it at the top of the interview, Joe, as we're talking with our buddy Joe DeLeon of the Believe Network. Check him out there. Another tough week for Georgia, Joe. A couple of more driving arrests. It's gotten to the point now where it's almost becoming as synonymous as their championship success under Kirby Smart. He speaks on Tuesday. What are you thinking?
Yeah, this has been a consistently climbing and difficult situation. And I don't want to make light of the situation, but it's almost ironic how many specifically, every single time a player gets into trouble, the volume and then how many guys are getting in trouble for the things that they're doing behind the wheel of a car. The only thing I will say, and I don't know enough about statistics with football players and the amount of car-related incidents, but it does feel as though because there had been, one, the severity of the instance where a player died and everything that happened with Jalen Carter, and then the instances that have happened since then, because of all of this time, naturally our eyes are going to be drawn to it a lot quicker. Guys get in trouble in the offseason all the time and other programs, and it's frankly much smaller of a commotion. It typically does not get as big of coverage as this. So as serious as it is for Kirby Smart to figure out, and I'm sure that he is going to get asked about it a million times at Media Day this upcoming week, but at the same time, it just feels like because it keeps happening, it's such an easy thing to turn to as media folk to say, what's going on? Why does this keep happening when the severity of it might not be up to the level that it's perceived?
Do you expect Sark and Texas in year one in the SEC to be as good as they have been?
I think that they are in a really strong position to finish in the top three because, one, having a returning quarterback with the talent level of Quinn Ewers is something that we can easily pinpoint for success in college football, especially in the modern version of the game with the transfer portal. Having that experience level, having been in the college football playoff for him and leading that late comeback, he is going to know how to handle adversity better. All of the games that he's been through, all the snaps are going to help them. Their offensive line's great. The receiving room's pretty strong. I will say I'm a little wary on what happens with their defensive line. We know the importance of having a really stout D-line in the SEC. You're going to go up against some teams, especially Georgia, with some big, big dudes, and they're going to really run the ball hard, and they're going to try and bully you along the line of scrimmage. They just lost Byron Murphy and Devondre Sweat, who were so integral and important for their success. I think they're going to be completely fine at edge. I think Trey Moore is somebody who I believe is going to be a star, who was really productive at UTSA and transferred over to the Longhorns. But I need to see, how does that interior group look? Are they going to be able to keep up with the toll of battling it out with these SEC offensive lines on a week-to-week basis?
Joe, it's just baffling to me that Deion in Colorado and his son continue to make the headlines that they make on a national level when they're frankly not good as a team. Shador is good, and he's probably going to be a top five pick next year, but their team kind of sucks. I know they brought in a lot of new players this offseason, but do you think that all of this hype and all the smoke from the start that they had last year is going to, you know, propel them to a good season, or are they going to be looking at finishing with four or five wins again?
Well, what gets really nauseating with this conversation is that those that are, I don't even want to call them Colorado fans, they're Deion Sanders supporters, Deion Sanders fans that have been following him. Not a lot of them are very as integrated and obsessed with college football as we are. I'm glad that there's so much support for that team, but that side of the spectrum of what we're talking about is so bullish that they believe that they're going to win the Big 12, they're going to go to the college football playoff, that they're going to really shock people. And I think that the other pocket of folks that really don't like Colorado, which I'm not on that side, think that they're going to win one football game and they're going to be terrible. And it's really hard to find the middle ground, which is where I think I sit, which is that they are strong enough with a number of star players, specifically Travis Hunter and Shador Sanders, who will be first-round picks, some nice defensive pieces, some improvements along the offensive line, but a lot of roster turnover is going to make it tough. They're better than the back half of the Big 12. They didn't get a crazy difficult schedule. They're in a really nice position to win seven games, maybe eight if things go really, really well, and they go on and win a bowl game. That is a huge accomplishment, and I just wish Colorado folks that were supporting Deion Sanders and this team and Coach Prime and all that stuff, I just wish they were a little more realistic, because when you throw that take out there, for some reason that means you're being a hater.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. All right, before I let you go, who is Georgia's biggest non-conference threat to stop them from winning a title?
I really think that it's Ohio State. I look at this Ohio State roster front to back. It's built like an SEC team. But more importantly, they did exactly what Michigan just did to win a national title. They brought back and enticed a number of important defensive linemen to come back. Tyreek Williams, Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau. Most of their linebackers are coming back. They brought in an important transfer in Caleb Downs. And practically their whole offensive line is returning. The receiving room is very talented. The running back room is the best in the country with Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. And they're deeper than just those two guys. It all is going to come down to Will Howard and if he can step up to the stage where he was shaky at the end of his time at Kansas State. He has the traits to succeed and to be a good player, but his performance is not indicative of one that is capable of going on to win the Big Ten and going on to win a national title. If he can step up to the plate, they absolutely can challenge Georgia. But I will stand on the table for Georgia to say that they were consistently my favorite to win the national title this season.
All right, you heard it, folks. Our buddy Joe DeLeon of the Believe Network. Joe, looking forward to continuing our chats as we head towards the actual football, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Of course. Thanks for having me, as always.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.